right, welcome to class today. Glad to see you all here. Before I begin, are there comments, questions, concerns, other things for me? Okay. Let us begin then by reviewing the quiz. This quiz wasn't worth anything, but I still needed to say a few things about what was going on. Most of you told me your names, thank you. You can see here, most of you are unsure to know if you would take this class if it wasn't required, understood. You think time is the most determining characteristic. I hope you're right, compared to these other things. We shall see. How are you feeling? The dominant thing is excited and calm, which is a nice combination. Well, I guess sleepy actually beats them both. I'm relatively happy that only a few of you were angry when taking the quiz, and so forth. The only thing nobody valued most was literature. although many of your comments said something along the lines of, it was really hard to choose, I value lots of things, which, huzzah! I also had multiple people say, I think this is the hardest question I've ever been asked, which, anyway, that was interesting. I always enjoy reading people's descriptions of why they value what they value, and so, anyway, there's that. As we dive into the habits of highly mathematical people, overall, you sort of said, I can do this but need to improve, was the dominant answer across the board. And I was a little surprised at how few of them people, I think we just had one person pick one thing they thought wasn't worth developing. Which, okay, great. I believe they're all worth developing, but that I didn't expect you all to agree with me. Anyway, but we're sort of, this is where we sit, and in general this will happen after you take the quiz. I'll run a script, generate some histograms, and you'll be able to see sort of where everybody sat in the answers. And in general, we'll also come back and talk about correct answers, though there weren't really corrects here, so there's not much to say there. But there's that. Yeah. So, our topic today, I realize I should have tweaked this, so I sort of moved most of truth tables till Friday, and we'll talk some more about propositions and operators today, mixing all of that up. But I actually want to start today by grabbing the list of symbols from our exercise on Friday, and let me just say a few words reminding or explaining Friday if you haven't been reminded before, in case you've joined the class late. Most Fridays, almost every Friday, we will have an in-class quiz, an IQ. And that will be the second half of Friday's lecture. The first half of Friday's lecture, we will have our TAs here in the room, and you will get to, we'll spend most of the time with myself and the TAs wandering around answering questions you have about the lab. So the lab is designed to be longer than, harder than, but similar to the subsequent in-class quiz. So my goal is for it to cover the kinds of things we'll ask in the style we're going to ask, but more questions than we will ask, including some that are slightly more complicated than we will ask. So the thought is that you will look through this, you'll be ready, you'll know what you're having trouble with, there'll be an opportunity for us to come around, answer some questions, help you understand the pieces you don't, so that you'll be fully ready for the in-class quiz. So I have posted one of those for this coming Friday. And on Friday, the first half of class Friday, will be myself and the TAs wandering around trying to help you understand any concerns you have about it. We'll also talk a little bit about some of the pieces here we haven't done today. So that is coming up. There is also a key to the lab. I would encourage you to only check the key after you think you know the answers. In general, this will be a better learning experience if you try on your own first, although they're both there and you can do whatever else you want instead. Yes?
Should we print this out before next class?
You do not need to have it printed at all unless you want to print. I will bring printed copies of the quiz, which will be separate from the lab. Look similar, but have separate questions. Yes?
The list of symbols will be provided.
The list of symbols will be provided, yes, and we'll actually talk about that today. Other questions? Okay, let's talk about the list of symbols. There are symbols, so many symbols. And I just don't think it's worth trying to cram them all in your head at once. So each of the quizzes, I'm going to put
this page on the board. It's going to be up here on the screen while you're taking your in-class quiz. We're going to talk about it today, make sure I've figured out everything that it means today, and then we'll also talk about sort of that first set of questions from the lab as well to sort of understand where all of this goes. The main goal here, the most important rule, is the column called this class. So we have different operators. We missed one of these operators. We talked about most of these operators in class on Friday. And we even showed most of these symbols. But there are so many symbols. And so the purpose of this table is to say, if you already knew some symbol, here it is. And here's the one we're using. So for example, you probably, actually I think, are required to all know either Java, C, or Python. I guess there's a small way you can get through 11 without learning one of those. Anyway, so you probably have seen some of these operators. True written either true or true. False written either false or false. Not written either bang or not, and so forth. We won't use those symbols in this class. We will use top and bottom, or 1 and 0 for true and false. We will almost exclusively use the logical not symbol, occasionally the over bar, to mean not. We will use the and the or symbols, and so forth. In case you happen to know, or will later learn, there's also in code these bitwise operators. You'll get to learn more about them, or have learned more about them, when you take a low-level programming class. Probably 2150 will probably be the place you'll see these the most. And they are similar to, but distinct from the others in ways you don't talk about, but if you already know them, huzzah. And then I just have other things these are sometimes written as that we won't really use. For example, and is written the same way that multiplication is, or is written the same way addition is. There's reasons for it. They aren't super important to us today. But I have this table, and it will be up on the board. So you won't have to remember. If you don't remember how to draw a not, you can go and look and say, oh, right, it's the tails at the end of the minus sign, not at the other side, and so forth, right? It will be up here for you during what's going on. We haven't talked about the last row yet, so we're going to talk about the last row next. But before we do that, thoughts, comments, questions about these things? Okay. Also, all of these except the last row, we talked about truth tables for last time. Just as a little review, turn your thing next to, pick one of the operators and have them draw that truth table and have them pick one for you. See if you can create the truth tables for an operator. Implies Q. So I need to know all of the P and Q values. So P, we could go 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1. Or we could do them tops or bottoms and so forth. And then P implies Q. Under what conditions is P implies Q true? If P is false or Q is true. P is false for these two. Q is true for these two. That leaves that one where it is false. Thoughts, comments, questions? Yes? Can I do XOR? I can. P, Q. We actually say XOR, not XOR, although I understood what you meant, and I'll try to respond appropriately when I do. Okay, so now I wrote the same symbol. I shouldn't have written the same symbol. All right, under what condition is the exclusive OR true? When one is true or the other is true, but not both, excluding the both case. So neither true, false. One is true, but not the other, true. One is true, but not the other, true. Both are true, false. Other questions? Okay, yes. Yeah, we haven't actually talked about that yet, so I'll talk about what that is here in just a moment. Other questions before we get to if and only if, or the if? All right, the one operator I forgot to discuss, the one Boolean operator that we didn't discuss last time, is this operator. Okay. This operator has several different names. One of our readings calls it the by implication. It's also called if and only if. It is also called if with two F's. It is also called equivalence. Although equivalence, as we will see later, has another meaning as well, and we'll get to probably next week. The idea of this is that it is equivalent to say P saying P by implies Q is supposed to be equivalent to saying P implies Q and Q implies P. Okay? It is supposed to be they each imply the other. So it implies in both directions. This turns out to be the same thing as the negation of P XOR Q. Okay, and we will sort of see how these bits and pieces work. So let's look at P, let's look at Q. 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. Okay, and let's just try to look at these different alternative ways of writing it. So we have P implies Q, we're gonna have Q implies P. So P implies Q if P was false or Q is true. Q implies P if Q was false or P was true. And then the and of those would be true when both of those were true and false in the other circumstances. Okay? So it's true if they're both false. It's true if they're both true. It's false if one is false and one is true. That is the opposite of XOR. XOR is true when one is false and one is true. By implication is false when one is false and one is true. And so we have this by implication as well. Questions about by implication? Okay. So we have these different operators. There are other operators we could talk about. If you take digital logic design, for example, they'll talk about NOR and NAND are also operators we could add here. There's yet more we could add as well. But these are the ones that are most commonly used in the kind of logic and proofs and so forth that we're going to deal with in this term. So these are the ones we're going to primarily stick to. And often it's going to be and, or, not, and implies. XOR and by implication will be less common than the others, but they will all appear. But in the real world, it is very uncommon for people to give you things that are all nice and pretty and ready to go like this. they usually say other kinds of things. So we're going to talk about those other kinds of things. I just have here a pseudo-random collection of sentences. I'm going to try to figure out how would we turn these into propositions and symbols attached to them. As we're doing this, as one of our readings discusses, there's this value of having a translation key. Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to define a letter for every proposition and operators to connect them. Before we do that, though, there's one more principle we need to talk about. This is a principle that I'm not going to ask you the vocabulary term of at any point, but you probably ought to know because people keep using it. Atomic. The word atomic is used quite a bit in computing and math to mean what it meant before it had anything to do with nucleuses. Okay? So the most common use in the world at large has to do with nucleuses and atomic energy and atomic weapons, all of these sort of physics chemistry uses. Before it meant that, does anybody happen to know what the word atomic meant before that? Yes. Indivisible. The reason we call atoms atoms is because at some point in history we believed you couldn't split them apart. And they were the things, they were as small as you could get. You could chop matter into smaller and smaller pieces of matter until you got to an atom and then you couldn't. And so they called them the atomic thing, the thing that can't be divided. Now it turns out, of course, we can divide atoms, and so the physics chemistry space has completely left this alone. But we want to, I talk about the idea, we'll talk about atomicity several different ways in computing. It'll come up in parallel programming, it'll come up in various other things. But today we're going to talk about the idea of an atomic proposition. We defined Proposition Friday. Who can give me a short description of the definition of this word? A statement that's either true or false. Okay? An atomic proposition is a statement that's either true or false that can't be chopped into smaller propositions. It can be chopped into smaller pieces. We could chop it into letters, for example. Okay? So we aren't saying this overarching concept of atomic, but we're going to talk about atomic proposition, meaning it is not made of smaller propositions. So if I think about a phrase like, if I am happy, then I am glad. This whole sentence is a proposition. It is either true or it is false. And you're welcome to decide which one is which, depending on how you think the relationship between happy and glad are. Okay? But the whole thing is a proposition. It is not atomic. There are smaller propositions that it is made up as. So I have this big proposition. This is a proposition, and I could deal with that whole proposition as a proposition. But usually when I'm dealing with math, I want to break it down into atomic propositions. And so there is, I am happy and I am glad combined with an implication connective. These are smaller propositions out of which the bigger proposition is made. And when we are trying to turn English or other natural language into math, we want to find those atomic propositions in almost everything. Are these atomic? Can I break I am happy into smaller propositions? I will take your silence as evidence none of you have thought about how. We will see that this becomes a little bit more complicated with some of the examples we'll do next. But what we're going to try to do is figure out what are the atomic propositions, what are the connectives for various English statements. People are everywhere. This is a statement. It doesn't have the best definition of terms, but that's okay. It is either true or false, assuming you can define the terms. What are the atomic propositions of which it is constructed?
Yeah. People are everywhere.
All right, so we have one proposal. We'll say the proposition P is people are everywhere. Anybody think of a way of breaking them into smaller pieces? Yes?
People exist.
Ooh, I could have E. people exist, what would be the rest of the propositions to make up this connective? We could say, what we really mean here is if there is a place, that place has people. You could argue that's what are everywhere means. You could also say, no, people are everywhere is just a proposition. It isn't always black and white. It isn't always crystal clear what the right way of doing something is. Okay? So if I were to say this is what people are everywhere mean, I might say that, L means is a place. And H means has people. And L implies H. Maybe? Now, the awkward thing is a place isn't a proposition. Is a place isn't true or false. It is incomplete. And so we're going to talk next week more about this idea of predicates that extend upon prepositions. Actually, we probably won't get to it until the week after. There are ways of doing these incomplete propositions and so forth that will allow us to say these more complicated things. But for now, you don't need to do this. Okay, I'll leave this in my notes. It is unnecessary to try to come up with more complicated sentences you think meant the same thing as the original. Okay, for this week, probably next week as well, just turning the English into a symbol, finding the natural propositions as it was worded is enough. So P better than L implies H for today. And we'll get back to how you would do L implies H with it. Thoughts, comments, questions so far? Okay, I don't like cake. What are the atomic propositions? Yes?
It's not a proposition, is it?
Ooh. Is I don't like cake a true or false statement?
No, it's an opinion.
Sorry?
It's an opinion.
It's an opinion. Our opinion, okay, is it an opinion? Cake is good is an opinion. I like cake is either true or false. Right, it's stating my ownership of it. Now, you could argue, All right, how about this? Maybe that's more clear, right? But even if we, assuming we define the terms, we now have, it's either true or it's false. Either I don't like cake or I don't like cake. So, should I just make it a preposition? Is it atomic? I think it is atomic. I think it is not. I don't know how to tell. I am still alive. Oh my. All right. So maybe it's atomic. Several people said they thought it wasn't. If it wasn't atomic, what would it be made out of? Yeah. I like cake, and then the whole sentence is going to be?
Not
like cake. When you see a negation, symbolize the negation. Do you have to? No. But you're going to get confused if you don't. You don't want any of your propositions to be negations. They will get you confused, you end up with multiple negations when you try to do math based on it. You see something like, I don't like cake. I doesn't like cake. I should change that back to being grammatical. I don't like cake. You want to say, this is the not of I do like cake. And I suppose, technically, to be fully correct, I should say I do like cake. Although the do can often be dropped because English. Questions about this example? Yes? If there's a negation, it is not atomic, because not is an operator. Yep. Now, I say that. Let's see another way of putting the negation. How about if I say, I do like non-cake? Non-cake has a negation.
However, the thing being negated is not a proposition. Non-cake isn't true or false, it's a concept.
It is, as we will learn in a few weeks, a set in particular. But it isn't a proposition.
And because it isn't a proposition, I have to leave non-cake.
Because I don't like non-cake is not the same as I don't like cake.
As the negation of I like cake.
Right? I can't pull this negation out of my proposition. So,
is a negation always a sign that you're not a proposition? No. But if you can remove the negation and keep a proposition, then yes, it is not atomic.
Other questions? Yes?
How did you do the not symbol on your computer?
Oh, well, very easy. I typed shift control U, AC. But it probably won't work for you.
It depends on what operating system you're writing, running, how you type things that aren't on your keyboard.
I can also write arrows, for example, as you've seen. I can also, I don't know, like if you ever decide you want a smiley face with hair. Ta-da! Anyway. Learning your keyboard is an investment that isn't always worth it. All right. So, let's get to something more complicated.
Most visitors ask about the secret passage behind the piano. Turn to sitting next to you, see if you can identify atomic propositions.
Proposition I can pull out of this? Yes, that's correct. The whole thing is just one proposition.
It contains no ands, it contains no ors, it contains no nots, it contains no implies, it contains no equivalences. It's atomic. Okay? And when you see it, atomic propositions don't have to be short. They can actually be a lot longer than this. Okay. What you're looking for when you're looking for atomic propositions are the existence of those Boolean connectives. Has something been negated? Is there a combination of two things with an and or an or? Or is there some statement that something implies something else? If none of those are there, it's atomic. Okay? Yes?
Can we say that most visitors ask about the secret passage and they are behind the piano?
Yeah, so this is the other problem of ambiguity. How do we interpret this sentence? Is the secret passage behind the piano? Or is it the visitors are asking behind the piano?
Yeah.
Okay. So while the visitors are. Which one did we mean? English. Sorry, it's not formal.
And so they may have different meanings. So you have to understand the language and often the context of the language. Now this is an interesting, I actually had this sentence, this is a sentence years ago when I was learning foreign languages and then giving up on them. This was a language I would use to see if I could figure out if I understood the grammatical structure of the language yet. Because this is a weirdly complicated set of dependent clauses, and it turns out that in English, fairly unambiguously, most native English speakers assume the secret passage is behind the piano, only because secret passages being behind things is more common than asking behind things. Right? There's this contextual knowledge. And we could go into why this makes natural language processing hard and so on, but I don't want to right now. But if we thought it was the second one, okay, so if we thought it was most visitors ask about the secret passage while the visitors are behind the piano, do we have a logical connective? Yeah.
Do we have an and?
You could argue, okay, if I did say while, if I had said and the visitors are behind the piano, then I'd have an and. And sometimes the word while does mean and. Okay? But here, it's not saying you ask about the secret passage and you're behind the piano. It says you only ask about the secret passage when you're behind the piano. There is a logical connective that makes one thing only happen when something else happens. Implication. So we could argue that this is they ask when they're about the secret passage and they're behind the piano. And we could argue that this means this. When you're behind the piano, you ask about the secret passage. It's a little bit of extra interpretation, okay? Because even this sentence suggests that they usually do go behind the piano beyond what we've said, right? And so probably this first one is an easier way to do things. It's not always easy to do this, and sometimes you need additional context. Which makes grading your results on these things a little complicated. Sorry about that. But that's our work problem, not yours. Questions about this example?
Okay. If you can run a marathon, you can win this race. Find the atomic propositions and the connectives, if there are any. People have mostly quieted down. Who would like to volunteer their key, their symbol, their atomic propositions, and connectives, if any? Yes?
P is you can run a marathon. Q is you can win this race. And P implies Q.
What do we think about this symbolization? I agree. Oh, good. Nice for being clapped here. Anybody disagree or have a different way of doing this? All right, great. I thought it was worthwhile throwing a fairly straightforward one at you. I agree. Let's one that gets a little bit more complicated. If you give me food, including casserole, I like casserole, then I'll eat it unless I don't like it. Give this a go, see how far you can get. Ideas, and I realize some of you are still working. Let me walk through approach I might use to do this. There's a lot of things going on in the sentence. and I'll just try to deal with them in bits and pieces, okay? I see that somewhere there is, you give me food, right? I'm being given food. That's a thing that is being discussed. There is, I eat food, the food. That's the thing being discussed. There is, I like the food. Okay? That's being discussed somewhere in there. There's also this weirdness about casserole. Okay? So there is, I don't know, I like casserole. And I guess we could say, I don't know, casserole is food. I think that's sort of implied here, that casserole is food. You could argue maybe it's not. And we may look at both the way where it is and the isn't. Okay? So, I try to find, these are things I think are atomic. I may have missed some, but then I'm going to try to construct some logical connective that I think contains a part of what's going on. The core of it, let's come back to the parentheses. If you give me food, then I'll eat the food unless I don't like it. Let's just start with the easy part. Okay? If you give me food, then I'll eat the food. And then this unless. Oh no. What do I do with unless? Yeah.
If you do and L, then that implies the unless, because if L is false, which is I don't like the food, then the statement would, then you wouldn't eat the food.
Like this?
Yeah.
Alright. So we have a proposal. We're saying, okay, I have to like the food. Now, we can look at this sentence, and we can try to say, does it mean the same thing as that sentence? My sentence is now, if you give me food, I'll eat the food, and I like food. And that is not what the original said. The original actually explicitly allowed me to not like food, where this one explicitly requires me to like food. Okay? This process of trying to figure out a counterexample, where is what I wrote, not the same as the English, is an important part of this skill. We had another suggestion. Yeah, in the back.
Perhaps maybe if you used an if and only if instead.
Maybe an if and only if. So just change this into an if and only if?
No. Like the G&E is good, but like that if and only if I like.
Okay. I don't remember how to write an if and only if, so I'll write both of them. So, if you give me food, I'll eat it, if and only if I like the food. Is this the same as our original sentence? Is there any counterexample? Any situation where this symbol and the original sentence, ignoring the part about casserole for now, we'll come back to that, say different things? Yeah? So if the first G implies E is false and the second thing is true, then this statement would be false. Would the original English also be false? Okay?
Yes.
Let's look at this sentence. Let's consider in particular the case where you don't give me food. Let's suppose you don't give me food I like. So I do like the food. So let's consider the case where you don't give me food and I do like it. Will I eat the food if you don't give it to me?
No.
Well, actually, I eat a lot of food you don't give me. In fact, I've never eaten food you've given me in my whole life. But we'll go with no, that'll be fine. Let's consider this case. In this particular case, the implication is true. The by implication, therefore, is true. Is that correct? Does this also work for the original sentence? If you don't give me food, I won't eat the food, even though I like it. Maybe? It's unclear what it says here, but what if I don't like the food? Then this sentence is false. So I say, if you don't give me food, I won't eat the food, then I don't like the food. We're still not contradicting the sentence, but now we are. Oh, wait. No. Don't give it to me and I do eat it, that makes this false. And so now this is still true. Which, okay, we're still in an okay situation. What if you don't give me food, I do like it, and I eat it? Okay, so let's suppose I were just to pull out some food I like right now and start eating it. This is the circumstance. You didn't give it to me, I'm eating it, and I like it. This says the sentence is false. This is a counterexample to this symbolization. It's not a counterexample to the English. Of all of the possible combinations, is the only one that it breaks. Okay, let's try to make that more clear. Okay, so let's try doing a full truth table. Let's consider all of the cases. Okay, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1. Here I have made a complete set of truth tables. And I want to know for which of these is the sentence true? And we also have to ask for which of these is the English sentence true. But let's start with the mathematical sentence true. Okay? So, the implication, false implies false, is true. Because this is true anytime the left-hand side was true. Right? The only place this is false is in these in-between spaces here. So these are the only places I have a false. Everywhere else, I have a true for this. Okay? So the only places that is false. Which means those are the only places L can be false. So this means I've got a 1 there and a 0 there, and every other place is just the negation of L. Because every other place I have a true, sorry, it's just the same as L. I just have the same as L here. Okay, so I have all of these cases. This is my full truth table. So this symbolization is true in these circumstances. Now we can try to go back and say, okay, but what about the original English? Does this match the original English? If you give me food, I didn't. Then I'll eat it, I didn't. Because I like it, I don't. This doesn't violate the sentence. And as we go through, anytime you don't give me food, this sentence is fine. Doesn't care what we do. This sentence doesn't say anything about the not giving me food cases. So all of the not giving me food cases were fine. It doesn't matter what I do if you don't give me the food, this sentence says nothing. So all of those are fine. But the give me food cases, okay? If you give me food and I eat it, can that ever be the wrong thing? When would this sentence be false if you give me food and I eat it? If I don't like it. So I'm going to say, okay, if you give me food and I eat it and I don't like it, I have a false here, which is what I want. This sentence, both sentences forbid me from being given food, eating it, and not liking it. So we're good there. How about if you give me food and I don't eat it? When would this sentence be doing the wrong thing? You give me food, I don't eat it, and I like it. This did the wrong thing. And I see I have that problem. Okay? You give me food, I don't eat it, and I like it. Oh, wait. You give me food, I don't eat it, and I like it. It says the sentence is false. So maybe I'm just set. Is there any error, any of these rows where the sentence is wrong? I had one a moment ago, but when I tried to do it out fully, I lost it. Where did I lose it? I don't know. What do we think? So maybe we're okay. There are other ways we could do this. I would argue that the way I would generally do it is this. If I like the food and you give it to me, I'll eat it. Okay? I don't really need the liking to be equivalent to the implication. This sentence doesn't really say anything about the case when I don't like the food. It just says that liking it is a precondition for the other implication. These two have different truth tables, but they differ in an area where the English is ambiguous. And so you can sort of go either way. You can also say, if I like it, and you give it to me, then I will eat it. Because this sentence only says what's going to happen if you give me something I like. So if I like it and you give it to me, then I'll eat it. Okay? And so this is also equivalent to the original sentence. There's generally many ways of doing that. Now, we've left out the parentheses. We'll come back to that here in just a moment. Question?
So, on a quiz, would all these be acceptable?
Yeah, so I would prefer these two. I would probably give most, if not all, of the points for this last one, because where it differs from the natural translation happens to be a place where English is ambiguous. Okay? In particular, the problem with this one is the forward direction here. Right? There is a statement in this sentence that says, if you give me something and I eat it, then I must have liked it. But sometimes you give me something and I eat it because I'm polite. And the original English doesn't forbid that case. It doesn't say I won't eat it. It depends on how you understand unless. So this would probably work for any of these. Now, let's come back to the casserole bit. I like casserole and casserole is food. Are these things being claimed by the original sentence? Yeah, I think they probably are. How do they connect to these other bits? Well, they don't really. They're just extra things we're also saying. We're also saying... Oh, wrong one. We're also saying casserole is food, and we're saying I like casserole. We're just saying those things in addition to the other things we're saying. It is relatively common, particularly parentheticals, but other cases as well, to have multiple independent assertions being added together in a sentence. And this whole sentence will be false if I don't like casserole. This whole sentence will be false if you can't include casserole as food. Okay? And so we just add them all together to make the final thing. Thoughts, comments, questions? Okay. I expect a fair number of you are feeling a little confused right now. Because we have so many different ways of doing things. We built a truth table, and that was a little confusing. We did it pretty fast, and so forth. English is ambiguous and complicated, and math doesn't allow that. And so there's going to be decisions. You're going to have to make judgment calls. So we're going to keep coming back to this skill all semester long as we proceed. Do we want to do any of these others here? I don't think we want to at the moment. Let me say just a few words in our last 2 minutes. And I will post some other things you can practice with, as well as the ones that we have on the quiz. Okay? The process of turning English into symbols is one of the most important skills, according to the people that asked us to use this class later. And so as you look at the practice for the lab on Friday, you'll see I have a variety of things going on here. Some of them are taken directly from computing. Others are just things you might say, okay? The ones taken directly from computing may initially appear daunting because you're thinking, I don't know what this means, or you're thinking, I do, and I know it's true, or the like. But the same techniques will work, okay? The same techniques work in all of these cases. And so we gave you 8 examples of that. We also have some examples of code. Code also needs to be turned into math. Code is not English, it's Java or Python in this case. But you should also be able to create those for that. So we've got a couple of examples of that you can play with. And once you start doing that, you can then generate random programs, because you know how to write programs, and ask yourself similar questions and see if you can turn them into math. You can generate as many cases as you want. So we come back on Friday, let me offer you to talk about this, then we'll give you a class quiz. I will see you all on Friday.